Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 235, entitled Transatlantic Machinations of the Fourth Reich. This is being recorded on July 9th of the year 2000, and again, this is Side B, after another half-hour segment that's on the other side of this tape. We were talking about the role of the European Union in helping to block corporate acquisitions by American corporations, and in particular we're focusing on the European Union's actions as conducive to German economic and political conquest. As I said on Side A, this is not to be misinterpreted as an endorsement on my part of globalization or of the increasing pattern of economic concentration, but as I also said on the other side of the tape, those are obvious facts, and way beyond Dave Emery's control. Within the context of those ongoing trends, please note how the European Union and the European Commission, in which the United States has no say whatsoever, have been wielding a significant influence upon and infringement upon American economic and political sovereignty. In the last article before the break, we took a look at the European Commission's pressure to block the WorldCom Sprint deal, something that the U.S. Department of Justice also worked against because of for antitrust considerations. Please note that WorldCom and Sprint are both American corporations, and yet the European Commission was working to block that particular merger. And note that with the successful blocking of that merger due to European Commission and U.S. Department of Justice actions, Deutsche Telekom is in a position perhaps to pick up one of those corporations. Take a look now at an article from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, July 6th of the year 2000. In numerous broadcasts in the past, we've noted the European investigation spurred by Germany into the Echelon network and the related Menwith Hill installation in the United Kingdom. This is a joint national security agency, U.S. intelligence and British intelligence electronic intelligence gathering installation. As I've said in the past, it's tremendously significant to American and British national security, and the German attack on same, not a physical attack, but the German political attack on the Menwith Hill installation and the Echelon network could be conceived of as having the same political significance as the attack on Pearl Harbor. The attack on the previously untouchable NSA by German intelligence and the German-dominated European Commission is absolutely, or not European Commission, but European Union and European Parliament, that, the strategic significance of that could not be exaggerated. More about that, and that's discussed in numerous For the Record segments available from Spitfire, more about that from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, July 6th of the year 2000. This is an AP story datelined Brussels headlined, Europe Widens Investigation of U.S. Spy System. Subtitled, EU Parliament Wants to Get Answers About Echelon Network. Again, this article is datelined Brussels, and it reads in part as follows. The European Parliament voted yesterday to widen a probe into an alleged U.S. spy network that many Assembly members say Washington is using to snoop on the businesses of its European allies. A special committee will immediately begin investigating the so-called Echelon spy system, which is believed to be capable of intercepting billions of phone calls, emails, and faxes per hour worldwide. U.S. intelligence officials have never publicly confirmed the existence of such a system. They have denied eavesdropping on ordinary American and European citizens. The European Parliament Committee will be mandated with trying to, quote, verify the existence, unquote, of the system and investigating whether the spy system violates European Union privacy laws. The special committee will have 8 months to investigate and will also look into countermeasures and possible sanctions against nations participating in Echelon, said Graham Watson, chair of the Citizens' Rights Committee of the Parliament, which represents the European Union's 15 members. As I've stated in the past, and I'm certainly very pro-civil liberties, but the Echelon / Menwith Hill nexus is absolutely essential to American and British national security. Personal privacy in the age of the Internet is a thing of the distant past. People who get exercised about this think nothing about giving a urine sample to an employer, which then, by the way, then becomes the property of their employer and can be used in any way the employer wants without the knowledge of the applicant, not even the employee, but the applicant. Bear in mind, people, there's DNA in those things, and if they aren't already sharing that information with insurance companies and HMOs, and I'd be willing to bet that's already going on, they soon will be. So you may be concerned that somebody's reading your email, but you're not concerned in the least that somebody is checking out your genes from your urine, and I would suggest you think about that. Privacy simply went down the tubes a long time ago. Note also that there's a very close relationship between corporate Germany and the German intelligence community, and beyond that, between corporate Germany and the Bormann Group. If, in fact, Deutsche Telekom purchases an American telecommunications company, in particular an American long-distance carrier, you will then have the BND and the Bormann Group and the Underground Reich checking your email, because the BND works very closely with corporate Germany, as does the Bormann Group. So just think about that. Think about the Bormann Group checking your email, and think about the upcoming Deutsche Telekom purchase of an American telecommunications company. Which one it turns out to be remains to be seen, but that will certainly be a very interesting state of affairs. More on the German corporate attack, on the German propaganda attack, I should say, on Men with Hill / Echelon. Again, something we've touched on in numerous broadcasts, including the Free Congress Foundation Goes West, and a couple of broadcasts dealing with U.S.-German intelligence conflicts. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. Dave got this from the London Independent, and the Sunday, basically specifically the Sunday London Independent of July 2nd of the year 2000. This is an article by Duncan Campbell and Paul Lashmar, Lashmar. It's headlined, Revealed, How the U.S. Uses GCHQ and GCHQ Intelligence to Spy on British Firms. GCHQ is the British electronic intelligence equivalent of and a partner of the National Security Agency. This article reads in part as follows. The U.S. government is eavesdropping on British businesses and using the information to help American companies win contracts worth billions of pounds a year. The Independent on Sunday has obtained official U.S. documents revealing that a worldwide intelligence network, Echelon, originally designed to protect national security, is being used to spy on U.K. and continental companies. The revelations are profoundly embarrassing for the British government, as U.K. firms are among those targeted, even though the eavesdropping network is in part operated by GCHQ in Britain. Britain's role in the top-secret spy system is also becoming a test of its loyalty to European partners, just like pressure by Monsieur Lamy to block potential British involvement in NAFTA, and just like pressure by the European Monetary Union on Britain to join the European Monetary Union and adopt the euro instead of the pound, which will further the Friedrich List plan for economic and consequent political subjugation of the United Kingdom. Please note that discussion of alleged spying by the Echelon GCHQ connection on British firms is being used to drive a wedge between the two great Anglo-Saxon powers on earth, the United States and Britain. Bear in mind that my projection of the next, not projection, but my analysis of events now taking place is that the battle lines of World War II are to a certain extent being redrawn with the United States and Britain, what I've called Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania, Germany and its allies, quite possibly including Russia before too much longer. Skipping down in this article, we read, On the same day in Berlin, the European Affairs Committee of the Bundestag is holding a special hearing into Echelon and its implications for German and European trade and civil rights. The Dutch Parliament has announced that it will hold similar hearings in autumn. So note that in Berlin, the Bundestag, the upper house of the German legislature, is also holding hearings into Echelon and its alleged role in spying on German corporations. By the way, countries spy on each other's corporations as a matter of course. We spy on others' corporations. They spy on us. Here in the Silicon Valley, where this broadcast originates, the epicenter of German espionage is the Siemens firm, one of the German core corporations, and therefore affiliated with the Bormann Group. They spy on us, we spy on them, there's nothing new about this. The question is, why all of a sudden, within the last couple of years, have we been hearing all about Men with Hill and the Echelon network? One wonders whether perhaps some huge Serpent's Walk-style terrorist incident is in fact in the works, and whether neutralizing American and British capabilities of forestalling such an event is the real goal of compromising Echelon and Menwith Hill. As I've said before, as nutty as this is going to sound to people, I think they should support the NSA on this particular issue, and the GCHQ Echelon liaison as well. As nutty as that will sound, just wait till you have the Bormann Group and Deutsche Telekom and the BND monitoring your faxes and email. You will wish you had the NSA and the GCHQ doing the same. I've spoken in the past about my conviction that the United States is descending down the same road that Germany has descended down. There are very strong links between German and American fascism dating back decades, just as I think elements of corporate America bear a significant degree of responsibility for the creation of and crimes of the Third Reich. So, too, I think that the Underground Reich, the Bormann Group, and German fascism bear a significant responsibility for and involvement in American fascism. And, in fact, there are strong links between the two, and I'm going to begin demonstrating some of those links and discussing them right now. A major story broke in late June about German historical revisionism, its growth in the German political mainstream, and a pro-Third Reich German historical revisionism as well. The following is from the New York Times of Wednesday, June 21st of the year 2000. This is an article by Roger Cohen, datelined Berlin, June 20th, and headlined, "Hitler Apologist Wins German Honor and a Storm Breaks Out." The award of one of Germany's most prestigious literary prizes to an historian who has sought to justify the Holocaust has ignited a fierce dispute here at a time of conservative and reactionary intellectual stirrings in Europe. The historian, Ernst Nolte, N-O-L-T-E, has argued that Hitler's anti-Semitism had a rational core, unquote, and that Nazism was in essence a riposte to Bolshevism. He received the Konrad Adenauer Prize for Literature this month, causing an uproar that has filled newspapers with invective and divided one of the country's leading historical institutes. The prize, whose past recipients include former Chancellor Helmut Kohl, is given for works that, quote, contribute to a better future, unquote, by the Munich-based Deutschland Foundation. The organization is conservative and close to the right wing of the Christian Democratic Party, but had not been considered reactionary or revisionist. Accepting the prize, Mr. Nolte said, quote, "We should leave behind the view that the opposite of National Socialist goals is always good and right," unquote. He added that because Nazism was the strongest of all counterforces, unquote, to Bolshevism, a movement with wide Jewish support, Hitler may have had, quote, rational, unquote, reasons for attacking the Jews. The timing of the prize was particularly delicate because this is a period of some intellectual ferment in Europe. The success of the Austrian rightist Jürg Haider in steering his Freedom Party into government has emboldened the right. In Germany and France, a conservative reaction is evident against what the French call the angelic left, unquote, which is accused of imposing a stifling political correctness on debate and of backing a multicultural tie that will sweep away the European nation-state. In this context, Mr. Nolte has emerged as an iconoclast with an apparently growing conservative appeal. A few days after receiving the prize, he was widely applauded at a conference in Paris where he again explored his thesis about Hitler and the Jews. Quote, "The award of the prize to Nolte was a clear political statement intended to promote the view that there is no particular stigma to Nazism in the light of what some Germans now call the Red Holocaust in the Soviet Union," said Charles Mayer, a Harvard historian. Again quoting, "It's exculpatory in the German context. It's also really scandalous," unquote. The unease and anger in Germany over the prize has been accentuated by the fact that another prominent historian, Horst Möller, M-O-U-M-L-L-E-R, the director of the Distinguished Institute for Contemporary History, chose to make the speech honoring Mr. Nolte. The institute was established after the war in Munich with a clear educational mission directed largely toward researching Nazism, skipping down. With Haiderism thriving in neighboring Austria, the ground has become fertile in Germany for a nationalist and right-wing intellectual awakening. It is fed by weariness, even anger, at what is seen as Germany's eternal victimization for the Holocaust, and irritation at the multicultural message from a red-green government. Mr. Nolte took up these themes in his speech. He attacked those who argue for, quote, an unstoppable transition toward world civilization, unquote. He bitterly denounced the collective accusation, unquote, continuously leveled at Germany since 1945. The historian, the author of books including Three Faces of Fascism and the European Civil War, unquote, has been well known for his argument about Hitler and Stalin since the 1980s. But never before has a center-right institution like the Deutschland Foundation moved to embrace him in such a formal way, intimating that at least the right of the Christian Democratic Party may be ready to countenance the view that the crimes of the Nazis were not unique and have been unfairly singled out. I would indicate that the crimes of the Nazis are certainly not the only incidents of genocide in the history of the world, not by any stretch of the imagination. This is not in any way to be exculpatory for the Third Reich. I would note again that the denazification of Germany is one of the great myths of history. It never happened at an institutional level. This is not to say that all or even most Germans are Nazis. I would note that America was never properly denazified either, with the profound corporate connections and political connection to Nazism that I've spoken about in so many broadcasts. The drift of Germany towards Nazism and the influence of the United States on German Nazism are the focal point of an op-ed column that Martin A. Lee, the author of the consummately important recent book The Beast Reawakens, now out in softcover, authored. Well, this is, again, I'm fumbling my sentence, but this is an article from the an op-ed column from the L.A. Times of Sunday, June 25th of the year 2000 by Martin A. Lee. The L.A. Times headlined this, "The Nazi Past Underlying Politics Today." Let me preface this op-ed column by noting that in For the Record Program 193 about the CDU funding scandal that Helmut Kohl's enmeshed in, I ruminated about the possibility that the discrediting of the German Constitution in the post-World War II period that this scandal appears to have affected might serve to enhance the German far right and to help drive Germany back down the road to fascism. There are some indications, such as the awarding of Germany's highest literary prize to Ernst Nolte, the pro-Hitler Holocaust revisionist, that in fact that may be taking place. For those people who've been listening to this program for a long time, again, note that this is an op-ed column by Martin A. Lee in the Los Angeles Times of June 25th of the year 2000. This will sound very much like the Radio Free America shows that I recorded in the 1980s. Again, the L.A. Times of Sunday, June 25th of the year 2000 headlined this op-ed column by Martin A. Lee, "The Nazi Past Underlying Politics Today." Martin A. Lee is the author of the vitally important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, now out in softcover. This op-ed column is Dateline San Francisco, and after a discussion of the CDU funding scandal that I discussed in For the Record program number 193, the Nazi antecedents of the mainstream political and economic infrastructure that was placed in Germany, placed back in power in Germany at the end of World War II, are discussed in considerable detail by Martin A. Lee in this column. Skipping down, "This tale of crooks and cronies has all the makings of a pulp fiction thriller. Suitcases filled with dirty cash, funny money bank accounts, falsified and missing documents, phone taps, kickbacks, shady arms dealers, and influential German industrialists with unsavory ties to the Third Reich." Skipping down again. Speaking of Kohl, we read, "But the truth is, Kohl seems to have profited throughout his political career by soliciting the support of big business, which he always received. The seeds of the current scandal were planted during Kohl's early years as a CDU official, when he forged a close relationship with the chemical and pharmaceutical industries. In 1966, Kohl became regional party chairman of the CDU in what was then the West German state of Rhineland-Palatinate. But he needed additional sources of income to further his political career. Enter Fritz Ries, R-I-E-S, a wealthy German industrialist who took Kohl under his wing and introduced him to a charmed circle of chief executives, business heavyweights, and high-powered lobbyists. With Ries as his mentor, Kohl became the advisor to the Association of Chemical Industries of Rhineland-Palatinate, SAR. It's not clear if Ries, now dead, was one of the secret donors who illegally pumped funds into the CDU's coffers, but this much is certain. he had a great deal of influence over Cole. Quote, "Even if I call him at 3 o'clock in the morning, he has to jump," Reese once boasted. But who was Reese, and where did he get his money? During the Third Reich, Reese made a fortune from expropriating Aryanized Jewish property and from slave labor in factories near the Auschwitz concentration camp. Not only was Reese never condemned for his Nazi-era crimes, he went on to become the patron of several conservative West German politicians, including Kohl, who was elected chancellor in 1982. As a token of his gratitude, Kohl awarded Reese West Germany's highest civil decoration, the Bundesverdienstkreuz, or Federal Cross of Merit. By the way, with connections to the chemical industry and the Auschwitz factories at the Auschwitz concentration camp, Kurt Reese was almost certainly part of the IG Farben nexus that we've spoken about so many times and which has profound connections to the Bormann Group. Continuing. It gets worse. Reese retained as his legal advisor and chief of staff Eberhard Taubert, T-A-U-B-E-R-T, another compromised Third Reich veteran. During World War II, Taubert served as a judge on the People's Tribunal, which handed down death sentences for such crimes, unquote, as telling an anti-Hitler joke or sleeping with a Jew. Taubert was also employed by Joseph Goebbels' propaganda ministry. In this capacity, he wrote scripts for several horrendous Third Reich propaganda films, including Der Ewige Jude, or The Eternal Jew, which depicts Jews as rats and vermin. Wherever rats turn up, they bring destruction with them. They destroy goods and foodstuffs, and they spread disease. Among animals, they represent an element of treacherous, subterranean destruction, just as Jews do among men, unquote, the film's narrator explained. Like Reese and so many other Nazis, Taubert eluded punishment after the war. Instead, he found favor with the West German government and worked for the Army's Division of Psychological Defense. In addition, he was recruited by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency to serve as an espionage asset during the Cold War. It was a visceral business of using any bastard as long as he was anti-communist, unquote, explained Harry A. Rositsky, former head of the CIA's Soviet desk. Again quoting, "The eagerness to enlist collaborators meant that you didn't look at their credentials too closely," unquote. Taubert plied his cloak-and-dagger skills for the Galen Org, a CIA-sponsored spy network based near Munich that was run by General Reinhard Galen, formerly Adolf Hitler's chief anti-Soviet spy master. Staffed by several thousand Gestapo, Wehrmacht, and SS veterans, the Galen organization functioned as the CIA's eyes and ears in Central Europe, according to American University professor Christopher Simpson, a member of the Nazi War Criminal Records Interagency Working Group established by President Bill Clinton to review U.S. government documents related to Nazi activity. By 1955, the org had evolved into the Bundesnachrichtendienst, or BND, West Germany's main foreign intelligence service. Galen's appointment as the BND's first director was emblematic of the wholesale restoration of Third Reich veterans to positions of power in West German society. Intent on turning West Germany into a strong, prosperous bulwark against Soviet bloc communism, U.S. policymakers sanctioned the lenient treatment given to dubious characters like Reese and Taubert. As part of the bulwark strategy, a privileged status was accorded to the Christian Democratic Union, West Germany's dominant political party, which enjoyed the support of Washington. It appears that German conservatives were spoiled by the Cold War climate that made their presence in government so reassuring to U.S. officials, fixated on containing Moscow. In the interest of fighting communism, the United States turned a blind eye to political corruption in West Germany for years. Undoubtedly, this encouraged Kohl, who ran the CDU as his personal fiefdom for a quarter century, to do whatever he thought was necessary to maintain his party's grip on power, even if it meant breaking the law. And skipping down again, speaking of renascent fascism in Germany, another example came to light last week when the Deutschland Foundation, closely tied to the CDU, gave its prestigious Konrad Adenauer Prize to Ernst Nolte, a controversial historian who was sought to justify Hitler's anti-Semitism and downplay Nazi war crimes. Honoring Nolte in such a manner shows the extent to which extremist thinking has penetrated the mainstream, metastasizing like a cancerous tumor in German ruling circles. It also underscores the dangerous possibility that the far right, energized by a growing intellectually based radicalism, could join forces with a nationalist, right-wing faction of the CDU at a time when many Germans are deeply disillusioned with the political status quo. And what I'm going to note here is a link between the German CDU slash Third Reich political nexus and American neo-fascism and American historical revisionism as well. In past discussions and For the Record programs about the Oklahoma City bombing, we've noted that the testimony of Carol Howe, a paid informant for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and Howe's testimony that Timothy McVeigh was the protege of Andreas Strassmeier, the son of Gunter Strassmeier, Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff and the architect of German reunification. We've also noted the connections of Kirk Lyons, an American Aryan Nations and white supremacist attorney, to the milieu of the Oklahoma City bombing. In For the Record program number 197, I noted that Kirk Lyons was a prominent member of the Neo-Confederate movement, which is not only seeking, to a certain extent, the secession of the southern United States, but which has also been working to justify slavery. I want to note here the connections of Kirk Lyons to the milieu of the Helmut Kohl CDU nexus here. We're going to turn now to The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee, the author of that op-ed column from the L.A. Times. The Beast Reawakens was published in hardcover by Little Brown, copyright 1997, and there's a new softcover edition available. There are also four interviews with Martin Lee available from Spitfire. Of the Strassmeier Kirk Lyons McVeigh link we read as follows in The Beast Reawakens. Strassmeier's links to McVeigh and America's violent racialist underground are all the more curious given Andreas's high-powered family background in Germany. His grandfather was an early member of the Nazi Party. Years later, his father, Gunter Strassmeier, served as Helmut Kohl's de facto chief of staff. A top Christian Democratic official in Berlin, Gunter was also a close friend and advisor to the Chancellor. When the Berlin Wall opened in November of 1989, they celebrated together in the streets. In 1991, Andreas Strassmeier's American attorney, the ubiquitous Kirk Lyons, visited his client's parents at their plush residence in Berlin. Lyons assured Gunter Strassmeier that his son was doing well in the United States. It was Lyons who helped arrange for Andreas to come to America in the first place. Lyons also introduced his young German friend to the white supremacist folks at Elohim City. I would also note, in addition to other connections of Kirk Lyons to the Oklahoma City milieu, I would also note that Lyons, as I've said, is deeply involved now in the neo-Confederate movement and American historical revisionism. An associate of his named Edgerton has been doing appearances, including appearances on progressive radio stations, saying that slavery was good for Africans because it was the only way that they could have made the transition from tribal to industrial society. There's no difference between that and the historical revisionism of Ernst Nolte, and in the presence of Kirk Lyons and his milieu, there are strong connections between the two. This concludes For the Record program number 35, Transatlantic Machinations by the Fourth Reich. This is being recorded on July 9th of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.